feel like we're about to get very New York in here.
Don't you mean we're going to get fucking New York in here? I'm going to tell you how fucking New York we're going to get in here. We got the fucking good rats, Ryan.
All right, listen.
You're a fucking good rats.
Yeah, you're from Manhattan, but yeah. I'm a bridge and tunnel guy.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
Hey, we're in New York. I got a gun. Let's get to a Broadway show.
What is this spinning on the turntable
it's
as we speak?
It's the good rats from the Great American Music album.
Do not know this record. I know this band, and I love this band.
It's as good as any of them. If you find good rats records, just buy them. They're all great. It's Pepe Marcello and Mickey Marcello and the gang. They're from Long Island. This is on Great American Records, and it's called Great American Music, the album. You got Joey Franco, pre-Twisted Sister, on this.
Yeah.
You got Bruce Kulick.
Oh.
But, man, if you don't have any good rats in your collection or you've never heard of them, Google them. They're just badass. Just a good old fucking Long Island Italian guy rock band, man.
I don't know this album, so I'm going to leave it out, but I'm going to say Start Here record is From Rats to Riches.
I would say that, then go to Tasty, because it gives you a little bit of a stretch, and they're still good ratsy, but mm-hmm. they play some really cool shit, a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff, I think, you know.
Check out the good rats.
This is from, what, 1981?
Like 81.
There's some of the later stuff.
So Bruce Kulick was done with his Blackjack band, I think, with Michael Bolton.
Probably. And then he Michael Bolotin, if you will.
Bolotin. Yes. And then went to Meatloaf, and then he wound up in Kiss somehow.
Yeah.
Through his brother Bob.
Meatloaf to a Kiss.
That's right. Okay. Take it easy. Shall we get cracking here?
Yes, let's get cracking.
All right, everybody. Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy.
Shabby Road Records Show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Shabby Road Records Show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Lava!
Hey, Lava!
Hey, Lava!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and I'm joined by a man who has just returned from a demonstration at the local airport, a demonstration of appalling, frightful drunkenness, A.D. Adams.
Well, you know what, Ryan? I am so happy to be back here at Shabby Road Studio in beautiful Sunny Slope. Amid all the lovely, friendly, and upstanding citizenry in the happiest, in the heart of the happiest place in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I kid. I kid. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, brother.
Yeah.
And joining us here tonight, finally, is Ricky Serrano.
Ricky!
Welcome home, Ricky.
Last time I saw you was in NAMM.
Yeah, you guys hung out at NAMM this year.
Thank you.
He's brought with him that cantankerous... Wow, you're really giving yourself a big applause. He's brought with him the cantankerous old sod known as Hal 5000.
I would tell you to kiss my ass too, but you probably can't find it, you blind motherfucker.
Oh, Hal's got my number.
Yes.
I am a
kiss
blind.
Kiss my ass, sugar.
Okay.
We thought he was maybe rested and a little...
Maybe not.
You shut the fuck up.
Whoa, Hal is firing off.
Wow.
Hal's setting it off tonight. Excellent. Well, great to have you two back. You love birds, you.
Ew, wow.
And, of course, we've got our liquid mistress here, Liz Morgan.
Yes, bravo.
Slinging liquor.
I'm already liquored up.
Wow.
she says.
Get it together.
Uh-huh.
Get it together. And we thank you guys for hanging out with us here tonight at the Shab, as per usual, and joining us on our Facebook page and then Twitter, at Shabby Podcast, leaving iTunes reviews, shopping, vinyl shopping, that is, through our Amazon link on our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, all that business, you know, that cuckoo biz that we do. Ooh, and speaking of business.
Beeswax, if you will.
If you need to get... A few beeswax in your hair looks very great and spiky. And if you want to get some personalized beeswax to give to your favorite anime-looking dude or chick, go to nameonanything.com.
That's right. You can get your name on, I don't know, pretty much anything there. Listen, we're talking T-shirts, sweaters, stage jackets.
Ooh.
Yeah, with your name or your number on it. Because, you know, that's how Gladys Knight sorted out her pips. By
pip,
number.
Pip one.
Yep.
Pip two.
Yeah. So you can sort out your pips at nameonanything.com.
Please do. And you'll save 10% when you use the promo Shabby when you put your order together over there. So, yeah, go over there. Visit nameonanything.com. Personalize your life today.
or your pips.
I like how there would be like a pip one, two, and then six.
Yeah.
Like three and four and five.
The others were drunk or just couldn't make the gig.
Right.
Yeah. You always got extra pip suits.
Right. Yeah. So the vinyl tonight is going to be very interesting on my end.
Unlike Kiss, they'll put a different fucker right in a cat suit, you know?
Okay. Take it easy. You know,
pips are sacred to the numbers. It's like, no, we can't have him wear the five suit. That's not five.
Are there arguments about a pip changing his number? He should have used number three, but he
perhaps
went to number six. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Barry Bonds did that, I think, when he was a pip. He wanted number three or bust, right?
Oh, you know what else makes this night very special here at Shabby Road is that there's beer here at Shabby Road.
It's hard to make things special around here. You know that.
Gary Gilson has done it again, AD. Oh,
Gary Gilson bought us beer?
Yes.
He also bought that half gallon of Jameson sitting over there.
It's a quarter gallon now, fucker. Gary G-Man is in the running for the Shabby Awards, which we'll get to in a minute. But let me tell you how Gary bought beer for us at Shabby Road by proxy. He went to our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, where there's a big frosty mug of beer right there cold, delicious, beechwood-aged frosty mug that says, fill the fridge, and you'll go there. There's a PayPal link. It's you donate shovel money directly into the fridge, which goes directly into our livers eventually.
Yes.
Yes.
Directly into our cup.
Right. Our solo cups.
Our liver runneth over.
Yes.
Our liveth runner over.
Okay. Excellent. Wow. You've hit that Jameson, haven't you? Haven't you?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Gary G-Man. You're the best.
Yes, and thank you.
So, Shabby Awards.
Oh,
let's talk.
Not the time of year. Should we get now? Listen, we're going to have to make some rules. No political speeches on our awards show.
That's right.
Oh, they'll be political. Come on, let's do it.
You should. Okay.
But let's do it like Lincoln Douglas debate. Like, let's argue Abe Lincoln and. It's Stephen Douglas.
Yeah, we're going to have to get Cher on here. Michael Moore, maybe. See if he'll stop by.
Oh, yeah. The Shabby Awards are just around the corner, AD. You know, it is award season. You got the Oscars. The most coveted awards. The SAG Awards were recently. The Golden Globes, Miss Universe even, pageants.
Globes, you know? SAG, and Miss Universe.
Yes.
Wow.
And of course, the most coveted is the Shabby Awards.
Of course. Oscar schmoskers.
It's such a special night. If you haven't heard a Shabby Awards episode, I encourage you to go to our website and search Shabby Awards. And you will find the second annual and the first annual. So it's time for the third annual this year.
Absolutely.
The best moments of 2016, and there were a lot of them.
Were there?
Yeah. When you put it all together, it looks pretty decent. When you have 40
I'm questioning your judgment
episodes,
and your sanity, sir.
Yes. And we encourage our listeners, you guys are the Shabby Academy, and we need you to vote. This is your last opportunity this week right here. So if you're listening and it's the first week of February.
Coming up, yeah. So
I think when this comes out. So this is it. We're going to close the voting because we're going to start recording that
episode.
Let's
run down a couple of the categories. Best mystery box. Best episode.
Mm-hmm. Best song.
Best song.
There's one of my favorite categories every year, of course, is the rock star tragedy.
Oh.
It's a tough category this year, rock star tragedy.
A lot of tragedy.
We had a lot of tragedies. Best impression.
Yes.
I believe I took home the gold last year.
I do believe. And it really should not be best impression. It should be most pathetic, most acceptable of the pathetic impressions.
One of the impressions that has been nominated is most racially offensive.
Oh,
I think.
I'm sure it is. There's no doubt.
Yes.
But, you know, we're not fair to anyone here. So.
Well, we do accents from all around the globe.
Badly, we do.
Actually, two of them. Yeah. One of them is effeminate German. One of them is when I did the Japanese band manager.
Yes.
It's horrible. But we encourage all of our Shabby Academy That's you listening. If you're within the sound of my voice, please stop by the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com. You'll see all of the – it takes you 2 seconds to vote. I mean, there's no – you don't have to sign up or log in or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just – I mean, boom, 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 boom.
We won't be peeping at you through your computer cameras when you're sleeping much.
Well, AD will, but he's harmless. And if you're listening to this, I'm not sure if it's still going to be on the main page because it's a blog. There's a little tab that says vote. So look for that. And please, please vote. So let's start taking some records out.
Well, how's your box there, buddy? What are you hauling with you?
Well, tonight I'm going to make some friends and I might make some enemies. My box title tonight is Critics' Choice. So I am playing three critically acclaimed artists, and one of them has never been played on the show before. The other two have been played, but I'm bringing some interesting records from them. I've got a great power pop record from 83. I've got a fantastic record from 73 that is just gorgeous.
Ooh, chick-a-boom. There we go.
And it's 1978, very New York-y. 1978, of course, of, you know, critics, you know, what it's what the critics like. So, it, you know, last week I had my heavy metal and it's like, you know, me being a Midwestern boy, common man, blue collar, you know, I was playing all my heavy metal. This time I'm going, you know, big city critics and snob elitist. And we'll see how I did. I'd be curious to see what people think about this box and if I pulled the proper songs that make them sound good. What do you got?
Well, first of all, I've just got admiration because you're still naming your mystery boxes, and I just haven't jumped on that yet. I probably could.
You're lazy.
Yeah, whatever. But my box is bulging at the lid, Ryan. There's so much rock in it. I'm telling you.
Films.
Yes, bulging at the lid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
I was
actually wearing a lid with that fake hair around it.
I remember seeing a promo for Bulging at the Lid on Love American Style back in the 70s.
Ooh, yeah, it was risque because even the promo was kind of R-rated, but it was daytime TV back then.
A lot of hair.
Yeah, a lot of nipples. Nipples and hair.
Hair everywhere.
Yeah, sometimes in the same scene.
It's like a Sasquatch.
Yes.
Sighting.
Well, I brought a little something by a post-punk outfit from England. 1979, Dude It Rocks.
Ooh, okay. That'll be sandwiched nicely after my 78.
I brought some American metal hard rock from 1983. Wait, what did I say? Did I say 1983?
Is tonight the night you play Quiet Riot?
Oh, and this one rocks. And did someone say New York?
New York 83, eh?
Yep. And then I brought me another little biscuit here of vinyl. A recent SRRS record show would not be complete without me in my tip of the hat to late 60s, early 70s psychedelic prog garage pre-prog metal. I found another one, Ryan. And I'm going to tell you something. This one is... I could play either side. I've never heard of this, but I'll get into it in my segment.
I'm excited because I love last week's
version of that. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Oh, really?
Oh, nothing. And guess where they're from?
England?
Long Island.
Oh, Long Island.
Long Island, of all things. Yep.
Ooh, okay, interesting.
So two out of the three of my picks are brand new to the show, and one has, I think, only been played once, maybe twice.
You have a lot of New York, and I've got a lot of New York in my box.
Totally.
I mean, Good Rats.
Absolutely accidentally.
At the top.
Yeah, and
wow.
The Good Rat has serendipitous. Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's draw to see who goes first. Who's going to be the first one to pull a record out of the mystery box? AD is on the red side. I'm on the black side. Ricky Serrano, who are very excited to have back here at Shabby. And he's got the two playing cards, red and black. He's got them behind his back. How about Chad pick one of our friends here hanging out? Chad, left or right hand?
Let's go right.
He says right.
Red.
And it's red.
Me
and
again.
It's AD.
I'm on a roll.
Can't go wrong.
I never go first.
Well,
always a bridesmaid.
Here we go. We're going to New York.
Hey, let's go to a Broadway show.
So, okay. Let's start with the producer of this album. This guy, Steve Loeb, L-O-E-B, owns a studio, Green Street Recording, in New York's Soho District, right? So he, along with rapper Curtis Blow, are credited with merging the heavy metal sound with hip-hop.
Oh, are you?
Right? Now, Okay. That was around 83, right around the year he did this album. So that actually kind of either coincides or precedes Run DMC's Kings of Rock, King of Rock, which I think came out in 84.
Oh, so. I was going to say you brought Run DMC.
Well, that's arguable. Yeah. That's okay. Arguable. I wanted to start with that sort of little jog to the left and, you know, head fake to score the touchdown, right?
You faked me out.
He produced every Riot album.
Riot,
including
awesome.
This. America. Now, is this the first? No, you played Riot once before, correct?
I brought Riot a couple times.
I think you brought
Fire Down Under,
which was the
Narita.
First. Yeah, so Narita was with their old singer. Fire Down Under was, I think, the first one with Rhett Forrester.
No, you're thinking of Restless Breed.
Oh,
that's the third,
is it the third
the
album?
Fourth album, and that's where they got the new singer.
Yeah.
The first three Riot albums are fantastic.
I thought it was the first two had the singer, first singer.
I don't know.
Guy Speranza. He did the first three. Yeah.
Died from.
From
inhaling toxic.
He just quit the biz after three. Went to Florida. Became an exterminator. Right.
Yes. Died from toxic fumes.
Yeah.
From becoming an exterminator.
You know what? He'd have done that in any given hotel room on the road.
I just said exterminator.
Yeah.
Exterminator.
Yes. It couldn't have anything to do with that half gallon cup of Jameson you have over there. Put it there, drunken shirtless Ringo. I mean Ryan.
Easy.
So
easy the two of you.
So this Steve Loeb, the thing is with this guy, he kind of, you know, they were doing local shit, you know, around. And now Rhett Forrester is a singer on this one. I brought the Born in America album. It's their fifth album. Their first one after being dropped by Elektra. So Elektra had picked him up. They had done an EP first and then did, you know, a couple full length. And then Elektra picked him up. Mm-hmm. And then they did the option deal. They either did one with an option. They put out two with Elektra.
Okay.
And then so they did two with Elektra. This is the first album after they got dropped from Elektra. And so
prior to that, they were on Capitol, by the way.
Yeah, before that. And then they were on a local label before that. So the
Japanese
label. Yeah. So, they kind of – and I think it was an EP the first one came out perhaps too.
You know, Rock City's a full-length album.
Yeah, okay.
That much I remember.
All right.
Because I love that record.
Yeah. So this is kind of a great record. They just start to get into the 80s thing. And this record is really a good record, I think, to the point where they're still showing their thrash and their fucking metal, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Flying the horns.
Yeah. But METTLE. They're metal. They're still going – clinging to their – right, you know? But this was all part of the whole, right? Cling to your metal. We should make an album called that.
No, we should.
Cling to your metal. Has that been done? Has that been, there's got to be an album called that somewhere.
Yes, and.
Somewhere, right? But, they went on to pretty much do one or two more albums after that, and it really didn't do much. I mean, but the thing is, their lineup, we were just talking about the Good Rats and Mikey Bones and all that stuff. And we were doing a lot of touring up in that area, Long Island and New York and you know, upstate New York, mid, you know, all through Detroit and all that. So that Western area. And this is one of those bands that I kind of call a feeder band, sort of. You know what I mean? Where they never really became superstars. They regionally did everything. And they could play anywhere in that region, get top dollar, draw big crowds. A great band, you know, pound for pound, dude for dude, but just never really put it together. But they were a part of that Long Island meets, you know, New York City, and then sort of the other wing of that was the, you know, central New York scene. And so there were so many great musicians and singers coming through there that all the British bands, you know, the Blackmores and the, you know, and Deep Purples were coming through and just plucking them, because Dio, you know, that whole connection. I mean, one of their earlier singers, this Mike DeMeo guy, was handpicked by Blackmore to sing. He did some demos for Deep Purple, and he was like Blackmore's chosen guy in 92. Then the rest of Deep Purple went, no, Ian Gillan wants to come back. So it was kind of outvoted.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. So so it was kind of a who's who, this Mike DeMeo, and of course, Guy Speranz and all that. But, you know, Mark.
It was a great scene.
Yeah. It was a really cool, it's a very burgeoning scene. But, you know, Mark Reel and Rick Ventura were the guitar players, founding members. They were kind of the stalwarts. They were the guys who were there pretty much from, you know, the whole bit.
Mark Reel?
Yeah.
what an amazing guitar player.
And a great writer, you know, too. Yeah. I think he didn't cheese out. I think
never.
I expected this record when I picked it up that it would be like, okay, it's not as going to be as heavy as the other ones. It would be really cheesy and a little too reverby. 1983 for my taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really wasn't. Yeah. There were a couple of moments I'd go, all right. You know, but this is a really good, solid record in that mode, you know?
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, speaking of other, you know, hot hitters that came through here was Sandy Slavin, who's the drummer on this record, but also Mark Edwards. Now, of course, that was Mikey Bones' old buddy, right?
Yeah.
And he passed away, sadly, a few years. And Bobby Rondinelli played in this band. So, you know, there's this kind of a who's who of that New York scene
on Long Island.
And again, being what I consider a feeder band, all the, you know, Dio goes, you know, there's some great players that I played with back in, as he's talking to Blackmore or Coverdale or not Coverdale or, you know.
Are you espousing the idea that it was Dio that was the catalyst for British bands coming over and plucking Long Island musicians?
Well, I think once that scene was discovered, once that orchard was discovered, once that hive was chosen, it was New York. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. So guys were in these regional bands, top regional bands, and great players by all. I mean, listen to the performances on any of the things or after that they've
done. It's undeniable.
And it's great for that. So, yeah, Dio was in the scene. Sure, Carl Kennedy was in the scene, and he did a great drummer who was in the Hub, and he had Pyramid Studios and stuff. So, you know, he owned that, and that Dio came through there, and Elf and all that. And of course, Blackmore and that connection, and all those dots start connecting with the little placemat at Howard Johnson's where you connect the little dots.
At the hotel?
Yeah. And all little.
You mean the restaurant at Howard
Johnson's? Yeah. But how funny is that, that East meets West, because, you know, you got these players and they're all – and it's funny. It was very Italian scene too, whether it be Long Island or the central, you know, Ithaca Pyramid Studios, New York scene that Elf was part of. But all roads led to L'Amour's at that point in time, showcases in Queens and Brooklyn, big clubs and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a pool of it. It was an orchard of that. And once that got discovered, it's like – fuck, well, you know, why go to Oregon to look for some dude? If you're looking for a bass player, go to the New York scene, because that's where the good ones are going to be. You know, so it was kind of cool how they did this. So I think what I want to do, Ryan, I'm going to start off. Let's just play Heavy Metal Machine.
I like it already.
And it's just a stupid metal song about a stupid fast car, and it's fucking killer, dude. Mark Reel wrote it, and it's just badass. It's on ZYX Records in the UK, Quality Records in the US. Came out October 14th, 1983, and it's badass, dude. It's you know what it is? It's a stupid fucking two horns up metal song about a fast car.
My mystery box is critic's choice.
Right? That's what I'm talking about, right?
All right, perfect.
Fuck yeah.
Good.
Right.
I like it.
Like a rocket, I will ride the speed of time. metal.
Well, right?
You are metal, aren't you?
I'm telling you, that's riot. That's riot from fucking New York. We were talking. Oh, the song was Heavy Metal Machine from the Born in America album, 1983. Riot. But, listen, I think we agree that Rhett Forrester as a vocalist and their style, they'd gone more into the 80s stylistically.
Right.
Kind of.
They had to.
We were talking about, hey, this is a great record, and it's pretty much a Judas Priest record from that day. Defenders of the Faith or Screaming for Vengeance. It's what it is. That's where it was.
Okay.
You know, sort of the American version of Nawabum.
Nawabum.
The new wave of British heavy metal. But, I mean, I think we could agree that Rhett Forrester's no Guy Speranza per se.
No.
But you know what? What I like about the whole Rhett Forrester approach is it's kind of a Blackie Lawless thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarity there, but Blackie's a New York guy too.
Yeah.
Before he went to California.
I mean, see, but that again, that scene. So that was what was happening. So that's where you went for that. Where are you going to go if you want to replace the fucking singer for Accept?
Germany. New York.
Right?
Yes, and.
Yeah, right.
Yes,
yeah,
New York,
right,
Long Island. Right.
So he's not like Blackie Lawless. He's sort of a charcoal gray Lawless, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Not full on Blackie. What do you got, Ryan?
All right.
That was rocking. Come on,
that
right?
was
Ryan,
good. Yeah, I did enjoy that. It's I got to get used to that singer because I'm such a fan of Riot's earlier first three records.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, they're so good. Critics' Choice tonight. Okay, so my first record receives an A+ from a certain rock critic that we cite very often on the show.
Chris Gow?
Bobby.
Gave it an A+?
A+.
Oh, my God. It's got to be a disco album.
Some people maligned this record, came out in 1983, because of its production. This is the second album from former ersatz John Lennon from Beatlemania circa 1980, meaning that he was in Beatlemania in 1980 playing John Lennon. I think this record is superior to this artist's self-titled debut that you brought a year ago. This one is Marshall Crenshaw's Field Day, album number two from Marshall Crenshaw.
Wow.
By way of Detroit, he goes to New York with a three-piece band. The drummer is his brother. So this one gets knocked around quite a bit for its extremely wet mix, meaning that everything is drenched in reverb and echo.
Delay.
So, Marshall Crenshaw was pretty disappointed in it, and he remixed some of the songs for a European-only EP released a few months after this. He was so disappointed, like, what the fuck did this guy do?
Who produces? Who's the man? Oh, Steve
Lillywhite. The bad guy on this album is Steve Lillywhite.
Wow.
I wanted to dig a little into his catalog and find out who is Steve Lillywhite and what the hell with this guy. For every cool thing in his career, there's a fiendishly bad thing in his career.
Oh, right.
Yes.
So if it's a zero-sum game, he's still at probably zero or minus.
Still at zero, yeah. For example,
okay.
One of his early productions was 1977's So Alone by Johnny Thunders.
Oh. Great. Ding, 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 ding,
that's a win.
Ding, 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 right?
That's a win,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. All right. Good thing. A few years later, he produces Peter Gabriel's third album. We love Peter Gabriel, his third album. But it was the album that launched the gated reverb phenomena of the 1980s. Fiendish.
It's a plot.
God,
you bastard. You bastard Lillywhite.
How dare you. He produces Chris Cornell stuff. He produces the
ding,
band
ding,
Hours.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, great band.
O-U-R-S. Yes. And then he... Oh, well, that U2 catalog that he produced. Actually, U2, I'm not going to throw him under the bus for producing that. I just don't like that band that much.
For love of God.
He did like October. He did Boy. He did someone get that drop. Whatever, the early U2 Unforgettable Fire.
Oh, forgettable.
They sound good, but it's just not great. He also did that horrifying Stones record with the one that had Harlem Shuffle on it.
Oh,
Dirty Work.
No. Dirty Work.
So, I mean, that's the story. This album's story is about the production and what does it do to this guy, this Marshall Crenshaw, who is a sort of a throwback in his time. He was like a throwback, like a Buddy Holly,
yeah,
pop singer, songwriter.
Elvis Costello-y in a way. A lot of guys were kind of doing that
like
then.
Guys that had songs that, where they all sing like this.
Well, you know, and not everybody could wear the red shoes, man, like with the Angels.
Yeah. Are you Nick Lowe or are you Elvis Costello?
I don't know, but I love the pony print on your patent leathers.
You're like another...
Your glasses are slipping.
So, but I'm going to say this. All in all, this record is a real charmer. I freaking love this record.
Yeah?
This is from the Steven Seaborg collection, by the way. So
I've got
shout
this
out.
Record. It's actually a good record, though.
This is his best set of songs to me. You know, the first self-titled record, which you brought, has the hit Someday.
Someday, somewhere. Oh, oh. Yeah.
That feels a little forced to me. I'd never really warmed to that record. I warmed to this record. It's a little bit darker lyrically.
I'm with you on that. I'll go there.
Yeah, and I think some of it is the fact that it has this big blemish on it. It's the Mona Lisa.
Is it a booger? I'll get that off.
It's the sort of Mona Lisa with the black eye kind of thing, where it's like, whoa, this is a great record.
Just that all that danged reverb.
And it sort of helps me like these critical acclaimed records, like where, oh, this is a brilliant record.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, then,
you know what I mean? Like, this one's fucked up.
How could Chris Galve loved it? Because
he saw through it. And I'll quote him here in a second.
Because that just seems odd to me that he would. That's everything he's against.
Right. The production.
Oh,
but
for God's
he's got
sake,
a big boner
right?
for Marshall.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Title of the episode. you know, when you first hear it, you think, okay, when you read about it and you know about the reverb and all that stuff,
yeah.
It's true. The mix is far too wet for the content.
Sure.
It doesn't match kind of...
It's not a Def Leppard record in right. 85.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're not trying to... Yeah,
it's not like
we're
that.
We're not trying
it's
to
not
make
that
pour
bad.
Some sugar on me, mate. Come on.
you know, and as I said, it's an otherwise... like a flawless record. Marshall's bit and his band's performance is great. It's flawless. It's like Steve Lillywhite just went, it's a great record and I've done copious amounts of coke and I'm going to put shit tons of reverb on everything.
Well, he probably passed out. He's up for days. He passed out on the reverb switch, just face down. Like in history class, you just kind of go like on the desk.
Right.
And you're face down and the bell rings and it's the next class and you're still crashed and you wake up and there's people next to you who aren't in your class. It's an hour and a half later, right? And he probably just fell asleep, crashed for a couple hours on the reverb button while they were doing the final mix.
Went, even at our age, we find ourselves waking up with people that aren't in our class.
You're right, yeah.
But,
and by that, we mean naked at Tiffany's.
Title of the episode. All right, so... Don't take my word for all of this. Okay. It's time for the Dean of American Rock Critics to chime in. Now, the Village Voice's Dean of American Rock Critics deems himself one of the greatest purveyors and assessors of albums that came his way in the 1970s.
He gives himself an A+.
Yes, he would give himself an A. And I'm going to paraphrase because it's super long. I'm just going to take it right down to the end. I mean, he compares it to the Talking Heads' first album, the New York Dolls' first album,
wow.
Exile on Main Street, in the sense that the record is notoriously badly mixed.
Okay, I got you.
Okay, so
but how great are all those records?
They're fantastic,
right?
And so they over. So he relates it. Why he gets an A+ is he says that this record overcomes that hindrance.
Okay, kick ass, right.
Okay. So he says, quote, "The man, Marshall Crenshaw, has grown up with a bang. Though his relationships are suddenly touched with disaster, he vows to try him until he dies. And you know what? Lillywhite's drum sound reinforces Crenshaw's surprising new depth, both his sense of doom and his will to overcome it. A+.
Wow.
So there you go. Now, one quick thing before we drop the new, we're gonna hear a song called "For For Her Love, which is a brilliant.
For her love, I'll give you everything no. and more.
No, no. This is an original song.
For her love.
Which is brilliant. And there's lots of very interesting harmony. This is what makes this record superior to the first one, in my opinion, is because there's a little more depth in his lyrics and the musicality of it. Like in this one, there's voicings of a major seventh chord on the first chord, like an E major seven. Going to the four chord A, but A is not played as A major. It's like A sus two. So there's like this
some General Tso's chicken, please.
Yes, exactly.
Play the record, okay.
So there's like little touches and lots more depth in terms of the musicality of it, and it's all buried in this freaking reverb, which in a way works to me.
Well, I guess you know what that says though, and in agreement. And I have this record, and it I think the songs are stronger. I think this is probably his best record.
That is For Her Love.
For Her Love.
From the album Field Day, 1983, on Warner Brothers, from Marshall Crenshaw. I hope his middle name is Stack. Marshall Stack?
Yes, Crenshaw. I got that.
All right. Press on. Oh, what'd you think of it? I mean, it's a great song.
No,
right?
It's great.
Great pop tune.
It is washed. There's no question that thing is bathing in reverb.
You learn to love the reverb at some point in this
record.
There's
a point you can kind of, it's almost like a pillow that's too soft. You kind of sink into it. And after a while, it's not the pillow and the fluffy shit around you. It's kind of what you're resting on. And that's a good song.
It should have been ultimately. Called, the album should have been called Tempur-Pedic.
Right, yes. It is. You can drop. You drop a bowling ball on that motherfucker.
Not spill two glasses of wine.
Oh, I could easily spill two glasses of wine. Matter of fact, somebody hand me two glasses of wine. Please.
All right, what you got there?
Well, I got some buzzcocks.
You do?
I do. First time on this show.
Yeah.
For this band. And I'm sadly, dude, sadly, or maybe happily now, just totally getting into them, the Buzzcocks.
I got to admit, I'm a little bit in the dark. It's a blind spot for me. So tell me about them.
Well, they were kind of they're a British band. They're from where the fuck are they from? Somewhere in up near Manchester. Ultimately, they were sort of known as a Manchester band from Bolton, England.
Michael Bolton, England.
Bolton, England. And 1976, they got together. Now, remember, the Dolls had been there, but the quote-unquote punk thing really started sort of officially as it was known as punk, and that's the Safety Pin and the Sex Pistols when they came out with Anarchy in the UK as a single. That was the first, quote-unquote, first record, or maybe it's debatable. I can check the date, if you will, but The Damn did New Rose. They put that out as a single. The Vibratools put out a couple of singles, but those were all sanctioned by record labels. But the Buzzcocks were not signed. So they put out a single nationally. And it was like, okay, who are these fuckers? So they were they were sort of, I guess, the first punk band of the time that was really punk that put out a record, without the help of a label. And they did okay. So they put out an EP first. And that was their debut release, and it was called Spiral Scratch, and there was four singles or four cuts on it. Three of them were going all over the radio, all over the UK, and they're like, well, look at that, you know? Okay. So they kind of got a buzz going. I'll just get right to that. Their whole name, I was going to wait, but their name came from, there was some popular television show on around Manchester. And you know the British slang goes, right?
Right, right.
So it was like, hey, mates, right? Well, instead of mate in Manchester, it was cock instead of mate. Because it was like, hey, cock like rooster, cock. So, and the ad for the TV show goes, here's the buzz, comma, cocks.
Okay, wow.
So at the time, that's, Sex Pistols.
That's
and they
very
go,
inside.
Yeah, so what's dirtier than Sex Pistols? Buzzcocks.
Buzzcocks, okay.
And so they went, that's a great name. So the two founding members of the band, Pete Shelley and Howard Devoto, that's a great name. So they took it from that. But this Devoto guy only stuck around for that first EP. He was gone. He formed Member Magazine. Band Magazine again.
Sounds familiar.
Again, never surfaced, but mm-hmm. was very influential and part of the whole heartbeat of that scene. So between Manchester and London, but you know the Manchester thing's a bit more, more tidy. They were slightly mod, if you know what I mean. There was you got your mods and your rockers,
yeah,
and the punk thing. So these guys were delivering punk, but they wore suits. And so there were a little bit more mod. So there was a little bit of, oh, you know, mm-hmm. punk. But what the Buzzcocks did was they put out, three, four albums. And
I'm sorry, where does this fall in the catalog?
This is their third album, I believe.
And it's
right?
called A Different Kind of Tension.
Yeah, A Different Kind of Tension.
It looks very 1986.
It's 1979.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
The album looks like it's
– it does.
Remember that album Big Generator by Yes?
Sure.
It looks like Big Generator.
Yeah, with the triangles and spheres, yeah. Circles and stuff.
Okay, so ahead
it's
of 79. Its time.
Yes, it's their third full length.
Okay.
So – and really it's kind of it for them. They really didn't do much after that. You know, the band splintered off. But it's not only punk, but it's – proto, listen, they almost want to go new wave, and you know I can't stand me that.
No, you can't.
I can't stands me that. And, but so they really
Popeye?
Don't go. They really don't go there. But what I think is interesting is that Pete Shelley, the singer, he kind of takes on. He's kind of got two voices. He's got his punk voice. And he's got his like we were just talking about the Elvis Costello-y voice.
That voice
but he doesn't go full that. So it's not sucky. This is a great album.
Voice isn't sucky at all.
This album reminds they go into you know what they remind me of, dude? Honestly, Beat Angels.
Okay.
Brian Smith was a big fan of this band. If you guys listen to the show, Google Beat Angels. Great band from Phoenix. Brian was a big Buzzcocks fan, and I know Michael Brooks was a big Buzzcocks fan.
Okay.
And these guys aren't full punk slam your fucking face, but they'll go there on a song. But then they'll go kind of new wavy, almost a little Dolls-y.
Okay.
And in a way, almost, dude, there's times when you just go, this is just good pop. So they run that gamut, and they never lose who they are. I'm a new fan of the Buzzcocks, and they're hard to find here in Arizona. They're hard to find these records, their albums.
Can you get that drop, Ricky, and take out the word buzz? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Proceed.
So the song I'm playing is called...
I'm a new fan of
this. This came on, right? United Artists, you fucker. From a Different Kind of Tension album. It came out in 1979 on United Artists. So they ended up, you know, getting a national deal. I'm going to play a song written by Steve Diggle, their new guy, their bass player.
Stop it.
Produced by Martin Rushen. But this song is actually really cool, and it's called Sitting Round at Home. And you know what it's about?
Sitting around at home?
Dude, look at the lyrics. The lyrics are sitting around at home, looking at the pictures. So all he's doing is watching TV, and he goes, I watch the news at 1, then I have tea, you know, basically. And then, oh, there's a family show comes on. There's 10 episodes. I'll have tea after the first episode. Sitting around at home. And then he gets high, and then he sits around at home. And that's the whole, look, you're reading the lyrics there?
Ideal state of mind, increase your perception.
Yeah, he's just getting high at that point. And what's he do?
Is that how you read that?
Then he turns the fucking TV. Okay, back to the TV, sitting around
at home. It's a family show, 10-pot cereal.
Yeah, right.
Something for everyone.
Tea on end. Part one, right, yeah. So this is great. There's a lot of melody. What I like about these guys, too, is when they're going full punk, they're still melody, whether it's vocally or guitar-wise. So I think this is a brilliant band, Ryan, and I am a new devotee of the Buzzcocks. I want to find all their stuff.
Can
I'm
you get
a huge
that
fan.
New devotee of Cox.
I get it.
Yes.
Thank you.
But so anyway, let's play that. Sitting around at home with side two, track two.
We'll be right back.
Right? That's great.
Let me admit that I like Buzzcocks.
Right? Right? Ricky, get a drop.
Okay. Got it.
But, you know, the thing is, though, right, it's there's a coolness to it. There's a swagger to it. And it's just there's really only two parts to that stupid kick-ass song. And all he's doing, he's sitting around at home and he's getting high. So the part where he's chunk-gong-chunk-gong-chunk. He's sitting and he's watching TV and describing the dribble that he's watching.
Yeah.
And then choka, 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 he's puffing on the dube, getting high, and sitting around. He's sitting around at home still, and he's jacked. Yeah. So that was Sitting Around at Home by the Buzzcocks.
Okay.
From a different kind of tension, man.
Right,
you know what?
On.
I'm kind of glad, though, this was their kind of really their last record, because it was 1979. They could have easily fallen into the sucky 80s thing, like kind of what the Damned ended up doing.
On.
So, yeah, they could have turned into like Flock of Buzzcocks or something. And they didn't. And so I'm glad about that. So I'm going to go back and get their other two records and
yeah,
dig that.
That was interesting.
Really cool shit.
Pretty cool 1979 stuff.
Whole record's right that good. Yeah. What you got, Ryan?
Well, all right. So Critics' Choice continues on here.
Right, yes, I forgot. Keep forgetting.
This one. I'm going to have some serious issues with, I think, with this crowd right in front of me. But I'm hoping that the listeners are going to go, oh, okay, cool. And even if they go and you go and all you guys in the room go, I'm not really into this at all. I think I've picked a song that may change your mind.
You don't have that goddamn vegan music with you, do you?
Is there such a thing?
I don't know. This music ain't gluten-free.
How can
free,
you,
is it?
How can you tell someone's a vegan?
I don't know.
Just wait. They'll tell you. Thank you. Sorry, vegan listeners. Alienating people by the tens of thousands. And
okay, by the tens.
Let me just do it this way. AD, one of these days, I'm going to bust this record out of this mystery box and bust out of this town.
Oh, no. You brought Clint Eastwood?
Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
Clint Eastwood. Like he made a record.
What is this, Any Which Way But Loose? Or...
I thought you might have brought that record with you.
First of all, let me tell you that I recently guested on a podcast.
You
so
did.
I'm giving a little shout out.
You did.
Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Yes.
Is the record I brought, and I was a guest, and we'll link it in the show notes, of a great podcast. Lee did a fantastic job. His podcast is called Tramps Like Us,
mm-hmm.
and we dissected this album brick by brick, and it is his best. It is the Start Here record for Bruce Springsteen's studio work, with a caveat of basically, I think, in my opinion, you could pretty much have the live box set on vinyl, and just that's all the Bruce you'll ever need.
Listen, I like
– this is a great record.
I like one of his records. I like Asbury Park. I think Asbury Park is a brilliant record.
So this record is fascinating. Fascinating. Now, this is obviously – it's a critic's choice because Springsteen is a critical darling in the 70s. And this is the last of the New York Bruce Springsteen. What happens later in his career after this, it becomes more – kind of old country. He almost goes into like a southern country-ish vibe when he hits Nebraska and he hits Born in the USA and he hits even Tunnel of Love.
Kind of took on a little accent a la Madonna, didn't he?
Yeah, he sort of got a little twangy and southern, which played to that Midwestern fan base that he cultivated, you know. And he looked – Hal understands. So this is the – this is the backstory of this record is interesting because what happens is
Dad was a hardworking guy.
Well, Daddy
went to work every day, fed his family.
The factory
never showed emotion.
I mean, this
but encouraged him to yeah.
Oh, speaking to the
right,
yeah,
well,
the blue collar.
Yeah.
Well, despite a 3-year hiatus, breaking away from his manager, Bruce was still the darling of the New York scene. Now. From the years 1975 to 1978, after a hit album with Born to Run, Bruce fell off the radar, basically because, I mean...
That guy from Mac? the guy from MASH.
Damn it, AD.
Oh,
I hate you so much. Oh. Well, his deal with his manager, Mike Appel, must have been so bad that he was willing to risk everything and lose all of this momentum. When you have a hit record in 1975, which is arguably the apex of record buying,
I would say so,
in
yeah,
the world's
sure.
history.
Yeah, probably.
And he's like, nope. I'm going to leave Mike Appel.
My father told me never to settle for second best.
Perfect. Yeah, I snorted. To add to that, he returns. Now, 3 years goes by. Of course, he writes songs. Patti Smith has her hit on one of Bruce's songs.
Because the night belonged to lover.
It was originally called Because the Night Belongs to Her Daddy Doesn't Like Me.
Yeah. Because the night is one day when you're working hard and the rest of the world is sleeping.
Yeah.
And your hands are chapped and hurting.
So this album, he comes back, right? This is the big comeback album after all that stuff. 3 years, which is a lifetime in the music industry between 75 and 78. So he comes back and it's a dark and depressing album.
There's a song called Candy's Room.
In Candy's Room.
I remember listening to my father late at night coming over from work, walking
Shut
into Candy's room. And
okay.
Yeah, never mind. Bruce.
But there's some – obviously I brought it because it's his best album.
Right.
Because obviously if you know the backstory, it's like what a bold move. Just like to go, all right, doesn't matter about money, what I've lost or whatever. I'm just going to make a record that I think is good, and what I want to do is basically tell the story of the people of Born to Run, where they ended up. And where they end up is right back in that small town, working.
Candy's in
losing.
The diner all day.
Yeah. That's.
Oh, whoops, that's Bon Jovi.
You got to admit that that's a good move. And no, there was no singles on this album. You know, there was, but they didn't do much.
Right.
You know, it
right.
wasn't like a Born to Run. There was no big follow-up.
Well, but in D.C., Surf was playing Prove It All Night. That was getting played a lot.
It was
know?
A top, I think it hit right at the 19, like top 40.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, like at 43 or something.
I think that was, yeah. And that's what the side two buried in the, somewhere in the middle of side two.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well,
but he was touring. He was playing his ass off in the region, though. He never stopped working.
It became a live band.
He never stopped working.
I'm
he showed
working
up every
at.
Day.
The factory. The factory was the stone pony.
Yeah, I guess it's right, though. You know what? He did work hard.
He's
I guess
a hard
he,
motherfucker.
Was,
yeah, he's
my,
earned
my
it.
My dad was fucking right.
So I'm going to play a song off this record, which is Side 1, Track 2.
Oh.
And Adam Raised a Cane. Do you know the song?
No, but
guess
my
what
father happened? Raised his belt to me a few times and I learned.
Well, you've got it. You've nailed it. Now, what's great about this record, first of all, it's the first record that he's done that has just the E Street Band on it, which is a shit hot band.
Oh,
undeniably a great band.
Stupid hot.
I mean, you can say what you want about how we're joking and pissing on Springsteen, but that band is
the
shit
band
hot.
Is retarded hot.
Yeah, so good. And retarded hot.
.com.
Please don't let that be a website for real. So what happens, what he does with his, he's got this band, and it's primarily recorded live and this whole new attitude now. And it's about these characters and they return home to find things aren't so great. And obviously this song is about the dude that comes home to live with his parents and dad is still there. And he sets the stage with a line about being baptized as a child and his dad saying that you cried when you were baptized, as if to say, pussy.
Yeah.
And the character that he's singing about is so bummed to see his old friends and they ask him why he's back. You see all the familiar faces.
So
and
the
they
songs
ask
are related
you why
to each other or related
yes.
to characters from the previous album
both.
And or both, right?
Both, Yeah.
So it's now, a concept album.
And you get really? It is a concept album. And Springsteen does his thing
I
where
guess
he,
that never's really been made clear to me.
The sense of failure on this record and a bleak future is palpable. And you know, there's in this song, there's a lyric in the darkness of your room, your mother calls you by your true name.
Oh.
Yeah, little shit like
all
that.
All three names, middle name included,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he's basically turning into his dad on this record. And that's what is the overarching theme of it. Like, yeah, you know, things didn't work out, so I'm coming back. So that's kind of like the idea of the record. And there's a great line in this song where he talks about the dad who walks these empty rooms looking for something to blame. And you inherit the sentence and you inherit the flame. And it's like he's turning into his dad. Like,
oh,
his
sure.
dad just like in his robe, just looking around like, fucking God.
He
worked his whole life, you know, and it's just he's so hateful. And it's like what happens with that relationship with a son? And now the son is back living under the same roof. It's like just a palpable. That's like, whoa, my God.
Dad probably delights in it because you're such a failure.
Yeah, I knew you were a failure. And it's kind of like,
but you
just
know what,
like
son?
You
should still try to work hard every day. Yeah.
One day.
You're a dismal failure, but you know what? You work hard every day. And
so there is, of course, a Village Voice critic that really loved this record. And reviewed it.
Could Robert it be? Christgau?
Promised Land, Badlands, and Adam Raised a Cane are models of how a limited genre can illuminate a mature, full-bodied, philosophical insight. Lyrically and vocally, they move from casual to incantatory models with breathtaking subtlety, jolting ordinary characters and details into a realm charged with meaning. But many of the other songs remain local color pieces, occasionally wonderful ones, and at least two, Something in the Night and Streets of Fire, are oppressive, turgid, all but unlistenable. An important minor artist, or a very flawed and inconsistent major artist, A-. Turgid.
It sounds like a trip to a New Jersey rest stop bathroom.
It's been a turgid rest stop.
Unlistenable and turgid. Like you bang on a, hey, you over there. Knock it off. You're freaking me out.
Last thing I'll say before we drop the needle on his side one, track two, Adam Raised a Cane, Bruce Springsteen's guitar playing on this song. He is freaking blazing on the telly, just pissed.
Really?
And the band is shit hot.
Father held me to his side.
Adam Raised a Cain by Bruce Springsteen from Darkness on the Edge of Town, June 1978. Columbia Records, after a three-year hiatus, he returns with his darkest, craziest, like, angriest record.
You know, I might listen to that record once.
You want
to
borrow it?
No,
fun.
No, I don't want to borrow it.
Okay, AD, what you got?
I brought more psychedelic hard rock. You know, I'm obsessed. I am obsessed. My new thing is well, what did I bring in last week? Atomic Rooster. Psychedelic hard rock, pre-prog, proto this, metal this. But I like that. I like it like my prog. I like hard prog, like, you know, guitar-y, driving. If you're going to play the fucking B3, play the fuck out of the B3, you know. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So I'm curious to see what band it is this time.
I ran into this album, and I'm shaking my still
– shaking my box at you, which we determined was a great Beyonce song.
It was. I've never, ever, ever even heard of this band, but I was at the record room not too long ago and thumbing through the records, and I saw this, and I'm like, this is so – this album's coming home with me. There was something about it. I'm just like, I have to have it. And let me tell you something. This is one of the best It's Coming Home With Me sight unseen records I've brought home in a long, long time. And I'm going to say this right here, right now. Side one or side two could easily be a side boobs.
Really?
I brought The Illusion.
That band. I saw that record at the record room.
I brought it home. Ryan,
you gave her a good home, eh?
Let me tell you something. Oh, my God.
It looked really cool. I nearly bought it, but I'm on a tight budget.
This is – and it was – it's not – the jacket itself is not – it's kind of split. The record itself, the vinyl is in great shape. But $6, $7? And I'm like, I don't – I was just compelled. Well, first of all, they're in a fucking graveyard. Look at the cover. Flip it over, Liz. Look, they're in a goddamn graveyard. So right there – I mean, it's like.
Is there such a thing as a goddamned graveyard?
Yeah, look at the fucking cover. Look at the fucking cover. So no, it's like five dudes totally dressed like the late '60s Rolling Stones, but totally cooler, right?
That guy looks like Punky Meadows.
And right that oh, see, and in a fucking cemetery. So I got this thing in my hand. I go, what the fuck? And I'm looking at that. Then I flip it over, right? And then you got close-ups of the dudes, all each one. And dude, they're so high. Look out. Go down from the left. That guy, that's my favorite
Funky
guy
Meadows.
Right there. Yeah. Dude, there. But look at all of them. They're so fucking high. This band was dangerously close to being giant. They were dangerously close to being huge.
But they got too high, apparently, buddy.
Part of the thing that compelled me, though.
Part of the thing that compelled me
was the producer, Jeff Barry.
Who's Jeff Barry?
Okay. I don't know. I don't know. He wrote Do I Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
Wow.
He also wrote the Do Ron Ron with Phil Spector. He also wrote And Then He Kissed Me.
Did he write any songs in English?
He wrote Be My Baby. He wrote Chapel of Love. He wrote River Deep Mountain High. He wrote Leader of the Pack with Shadow Morton of New York Dolls production fame.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He also wrote Honey, sugar, sugar.
So is this a bubblegum album then?
Oh, no. It's not a bubblegum record. It's every record you've ever wanted from the 60s, dude. It gets...
Don't oversell it.
It gets so totally hyper.
So.
Now listen, I'm going to show you this, Ryan. Look, at the top, I always write the title of the song, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't because
notes.
There are three songs that I want to write or play. There are three songs that I want to play, and I don't know which one to play. And I'm telling you, this is both sides are side boob quality. I'm fucking here to tell you, this is their second album. They put out three.
What are we doing here?
Dude, they put out three. And I'm telling you, this is the best record you've never heard that you're holding in your hand right now.
The Illusion.
Guess where they're from? Long Island. They're from Long Island.
Get out of here!
I'm not kidding with the Long Island. I'm not kidding you with that. So right. So they run into this guy that this Jeff Barry and he's just like, I'll produce you fuckers. I will totally produce you. So they go to his studio and he fucking puts out their shit and they put out more stuff. He puts out more. So three records, they never fucking really did much. Now, they had a couple of single hits, like number 92.
Bubbling under. Kinda.
Yeah. Okay. And never really went big. And of course, you know, and again, we were talking about Long Island, the Italian guys. You got your Mike Ricciardella. You got your Mike Mancicalo.
Uh-oh.
You got your Rick Cerniglia. You got your John Vinci. And you got some, I don't know, some goddamn Jew named Chuck Alder.
How dare you?
Right, yeah. Woo! I mean, it's like, yeah. But it's still New York right now.
I'll edit that out.
Yeah. So, then you got this guy, Chuck Alder.
Some Jew.
Right? Chuck Alder. He's a record president guy's son or something. So you got these.
Oh, geez.
So we got these. This Jeff Berry guy who totally believes in these guys. And he's putting out their records, three of them. They're hitting sort of, but it just was like, that's it. They just quit. They were like, I'm done. We're done with this. They just wanted to do different things. It was like late. It was 69, 69, and 70 when their three records came out.
Okay.
So they're like, you know, the times they are changing. Mm. And they wanted to go, some guys wanted to go full prog. Some guys wanted to go full metal. And what the thing is about this record and this band is that they visit all of those styles. Hmm. Absolutely and completely, convincingly. Dude, there are times on this record the vocals are so badass that you swear you're listening to an early fucking Three Dog Night record.
Okay.
And then they get heavy and they're doing some song and the drummer's doing like crazy ass shit. So we've got three choices here as far as songs. And I don't know where to start with it. So I think we could either do side one, track one, which is...
I'm always for that.
Okay, well, it's a song called How Does It Feel? It's kind of a pop song, but don't think the drummer's not going in the chorus, because he is. So it's more poppy, rock, mainstream, going for the fucking radio thing.
Okay.
Then they have a song which is heavy as all fuck, side one, track four, I think, called Don't Push It. And it's fucking, dude, whoa, it's fucking heavy.
Maybe.
Yeah, you should see my face. You can't see my face when I do that, but it's that wrinkled.
You gave me the horns. Yeah.
Crinkled rock face.
You look like Ozzy on the cover of Speak of the Devil.
Right. And then there's another one. Now, you just did a chant song. So I'm leaning this way. And this is another selling point. This song is called Peace Pipe. So being 1970, I'm thinking Cherokee people, you know, sort of a stereotypical Indian chant, which there absolutely is in this song.
Oh, no.
And it's a rocker, but dude, this is rocker. This, they get metal. They get full Blue Oyster Cult on this song. We're talking Red and the Black. And this came out before. And I'm thinking, let's play that.
Okay.
Let's play Peace Pipe. And you tell me after this is done, if you don't go... You know, I think Buck Dharma went and saw this band a few times out on Long Island.
Oh, you're right.
Oh,
okay,
I am.
Yeah,
so check it out. So we're going to play The Illusion. The album is called Together as a Way of Life from Steed Records. Now, Steed Records also put out Andy Kim. Remember Andy Kim?
What was his hit?
Baby, I love you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Right? Remember that one? So it's going to be what? Side... I'm trying to remember now. Side two, track four, I think. No, side two, track three. It's called Peace Pipe.
Thank you.
right?
I hate you so much for buying that record when I had it in my hands. Dude, I know. The record store. That's freaking awesome. That's so Blue Oyster Cult.
The whole record's that good, dude. I swear to God it is.
They can't deny that.
God.
They can't deny the fact that they had that record.
You know,
and learn from
you
it.
Know Eric Bloom and Buck Dharma went out and saw these guys play out on Long Island. You guarantee. This record came out in 69. What?
69.
You know. Yeah.
Amazing.
So this is on Steed Records, but this band is heavy and Blue Oyster Culty early, you know, black and white period, Blue Oyster Culty as get, you know, dude, they'll go on full hard. Remember when Three Dog Night in their early days would get really hard rock and band,
yeah,
kind of almost funk metal, and then those harmonies kick in, and these guys will do that. Then they got a song that's totally Stevie Ray Vaughan Texas blues style. With harmonies in it, you're going, what the fuck are these guys?
What are we listening to?
Everything. And they do everything. It's not. And the thing is, they're not trying to do different styles. They're those guys who just play that shit real good and aren't pigeonholed.
Wow.
And maybe that's why they didn't make it at that point in time, because their record was a little too diverse. But I'm telling you, if you want great song after great song after great arrangement and great production and performance, this record, dude, I am the illusion. I'm blown away by them. This is their second record. They got two more out there. Get them if you can, or don't. Leave them for me.
I got to say, AD, your mystery box is the mark of quality tonight.
How about that, right?
Yes. Wow. Good stuff, man. Okay, so Critics' Choice, part three. This is an artist. Okay, now, again, divisive, just like the Springsteen was. I'm going to say this about the last record I brought here. There's a Rolling Stone article that called this the Sgt. Peppers of the 1970s.
That was the 1970s version of Sgt. Pepper you brought?
No, not the Robert Stigwood Bee Gees.
Oh, okay. Oh, thanks for not.
No, it's like it's the concept album that was, you know, of the 70s was on par with the Beatles. But the producer of the album calls it one of the best and most complete pieces of work that he's ever been involved with. So this is a very difficult record. And I remember when I first heard it, I heard about its you know,
magical
difficult.
Powers.
It's difficulty.
Oh, okay.
And as the final track played off, you know, on side two, I went, well, I got through it.
Oh, did you, the first time you heard it, did you buy it or were you at a friend's house and they made you listen to it?
No, I did buy it because I'm a fan of Bob Ezrin.
Okay.
And I'm a fan
did you bring the elder?
Of Lou Reed.
Oh.
And I brought Berlin from
1973. Yeah.
So now listen, you guys.
Listen up, you mugs.
Okay, so it is an artist, going back to my theme tonight. Obviously, Lou Reed, Velvet Underground, is a critically acclaimed thing of the elitist sort of critics that review records in Rolling Stone. They love and cite Lou Reed. And,
well, they wanted Warhol to like them.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah. They wanted to be in the crowd. Right. That's how you
really
get in
what
the
was
crowd.
Going, that was what was
absolutely.
Going on back then.
So this record is Bob Ezrin. So if you're a fan of Billion Dollar Babies, which was made in the same year, and you're a fan of, like, if you're a Kiss fan, Destroyer or The Elder or whatever, or The Wall, and you're a Bob Ezrin dude, this is a must-own record because this is so Bob Ezrin.
Yeah.
He really goes hog wild on this. And every cliche that you know Bob Ezrin uses.
Children's choir. Check.
Is basically.
String background. Check. Right, string quartet. Check. Horns.
Right.
Check.
Yeah. So Bob Ezrin and Lou Reed were brought together for the first time when Bob Ezrin was in his early 20s. This is something fascinating. Like, looking back at his career. Love It to Death is his first record, right?
And a damn good one.
Alice Cooper's Love It to Death. Yep. 1971?
70, I want to say.
How old was Bob Ezrin when he made that record
like
with
11.
Him?
11 or 12.
18.
Yeah. And he liked it.
18 and he liked it. It was an amazing record, and this guy's like a prodigy, Bob Ezrin. So he's like 20, 21 when he's putting this record together, and his sound is solidified. Like, when you think of Bob Ezrin records, it was solidified by the time he was 21 years old, which is fascinating, dude. Think about that as a prodigy.
Yeah.
But he's doing the horn parts, and he's got the piano, and he's got all the musicians, all the best musicians of the day.
He's hearing the demos, and he's polishing it in his head the minute he hears it, you know?
It's amazing.
He's horn lines, and yeah.
What an amazing dude. So,
really, so for that age, it's amazing.
Ezrin had produced a cover of the Velvet Underground's, which is Lou Reed's band, the song Rock and Roll. Jane's Addiction covered that.
Yep.
The one that Ezrin did was with Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels on the album Detroit. Lou Reed hears that and goes, dude, whoa, what a great version. So, you know, Lou Reed goes, kind of, I might be interested in working with this kid on my next album. He's hot on the heels of Transformer, which he did with David Bowie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had the first Walk on the Wild Side hit and everything. And he wanted to go in a different direction. Lou Reed's like, I don't care for that.
They made him start paying for the drugs. He's like, right. I'm out of here.
Maybe that's what it was. So Reed invites Ezrin to come to his gig at Massey Hall in Toronto, which is where Bob Ezrin's hometown. Uh-huh. Opening act that night, by the way, Genesis.
Really?
1972.
Wow.
So they hang out and they meet. And so Lou Reed ends up hanging out at Ezrin's house in Toronto after the show for weeks on end.
Well, they liked it there, apparently.
And Bob Ezrin says that, quote, there he was, this blazingly smart guy who had written my life.
Because
he's a fan. And they hit it off, obviously, because of that. And Reed had wanted to do something different from the Bowie production. He wanted to kind of move away from that. He didn't like the Transformer record, actually. He's like, well, you know. You know, and you hear interviews with Lou Reed later saying that he wasn't. I mean,
he loved it. It's just not cool to say so. That's Lou Reed. Yeah, he fucking loved it. He's going, fuck yeah, it's a great record.
So he's sitting with Bob Ezrin, a 20-something, 21-year-old Bob Ezrin in his own house, you know. And Bob Ezrin goes, I love the stories in your songs, but I wish they had an ending. And he specifically pointed to the couple depicted in the song Berlin, which is actually an old song. I think it dates back to Velvet Underground, but it appeared on Lou Reed's first eponymous solo album in 72, which is a little, I mean, you start with Transformer basically in Lou Reed's career. But so Lou Reed loves this idea. Like, he was fascinated by it. Like, oh, and he takes it as a challenge, you know, like, okay. So these two people that I wrote about in Berlin, let's see what happens. And they basically make the most depressing record of all time. And
with Happy Children Choir in the background.
There's love and hate for this record because it's a difficult record to get through. But there's beautiful moments on this record. No doubt about it. Have you heard it all the way through?
Yeah, I have it.
You have it?
I have it.
Side one is a masterpiece. Side two is difficult.
It's really, you know what? It's disjointed, and I don't think it's certainly not Reed's best. I like Lou Reed best live with a rock band. That's where I like my Lou Reed.
Mm-hmm.
I like my Lou
Reed like your rock
live with a rock and roll band.
Rock and Roll Animal.
Absolutely.
Would be your album.
That's my Lou Reed.
Which is the fault what came out after this.
Right.
You,
I don't like the tricky, but clever.
But here,
Lou
here's
Reed,
the thing. Let me stop
too
you.
Smart for his own good, Lou
because
Reed.
Because this is the Ezrin crew. This
I know.
Is Prakash,
John,
no,
or Whitey
actually,
Glenn. And
sorry,
this.
Sorry. No, it's not. It's Jack Bruce plays bass on this record.
Oh no, shit.
But it is. It's Ansley Dunbar on drums.
Great
and
band.
It's, but it's Hunter Wagner.
Okay, right, right. And it's, that's a great listen. It's a great record, and I get it critically. I don't think it's Ezrin's swan song, and I don't think it's the best of Lou Reed. I think Lou Reed, better thank God, Bob Ezrin was there for this record.
It's but a Bob Ezrin solo album.
Absolutely. With his crew.
I'm going to play...
Which I think saves it.
I'm going to play How Do You Think It Feels, which is one of my favorite Lou Reed vocals. And that's usually the thing that turns people off to Lou Reed is his vocals. But I love what Bob coaxes out of him, because this song is about how do you think it feels when you're speeding and lonely. Like he's obviously just freaking crippled from drugs. Yeah. And he's got that nervous, like, how do you think?
Not buying it, Lou. He hits the talk back. Not buying it, Lou. Try it again. Take three.
Try it again. Like, yeah. But he's like, whew, come here, baby. little things in there. That's very charismatic. And then it's Billion Dollar Babies. The bed track is the horns,
sure,
and everything from Billion Dollar Babies.
Absolutely.
No doubt. It was a nightmare for Bob Ezrin to make this record. The problem was Lou Reed was
still a heroin junkie.
He was
and
he had his friends.
Of
his New York
friends.
Because
he's fresh back from Berlin. Hey, everybody, I'm home. You should come out and make new record, shake out. Woo!
Lou is pounding heroin, taking pills.
Yeah.
And Bob says that undermined my sense of familiarity and comfort. And Lou,
you're
could
not
be
the Lou Reed I used to love and know.
I mean, and Lou Reed obviously is aloof, and if you get him on the wrong day, it's like he's devastatingly rude.
The thing was always about Lou Reed with me is he deems himself the smartest fucker in the room. That's what always put me off about Lou Reed.
He wants you to criticize him.
Oh, I think he wants to criticize you. And
yes,
he says
and he
that
wants you to fight
to
with
do
him.
It. Yeah.
He's picking fights with, like, mentally with you.
And it's like, come on, let me just, let's have a conversation instead of this chess game. Let's talk about your music.
Well, now that we're in bashing mode, Ricky.
And don't get me wrong, I love Lou Reed.
I fucking love him too. Robert Christgau, the dean of American Rock Critics, starts his review with, "It happens to be horseshit."
Oh!
The story is lousy. If something similar was coughed up by some avant-garde asshole like, Alfred Chester, arcane reference for all you rock folk who think you're cool because you've read half of Nova Express, everyone would be too bored to puke at it. The music is only competent. Even Bob Ezrin can't manufacture a distance between the washed-up characters and their washed-up creator when the creator is actually singing. C.
Equals, Bob Ezrin didn't get invited to the I'm Coming Back to New York party.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's what
and
that
look
says.
How, look what
Lester
Christgau,
Bangs was in the VIP section.
Look how Christgau has to make these references to Alfred Chester and the Nova Express.
So you don't know.
You don't
I'm
know.
I'm smarter than you are.
Right.
We're pointing at each other in a very haughty
snarky
type of way.
Haughty, isn't it?
Haughty. You, and waggling off, you are not as smart as
Liz,
I
so,
am.
Side one, track three. How do you think it feels to be speeding and lonely?
If only I had a little think it feels? And when do you think it stops? Days come down, mama, hunting around always. Ooh, cause you're afraid of sleeping. How do you think it feels to feel like a wolf and foxy? How do you think it feels to always make love by proxy?
From the Billion Dollar Babies album from Alice Cooper on Warner Brothers
right,
Records,
yeah.
1973. Oops, I'm sorry. That's Lou Reed's Berlin.
Lou Reed
from
has
the
never
same
heard
year.
Of, what's that? It's called a saxophone, Lou.
RCA.
What's that?
RCA Records. Side one's a masterpiece. Side two, take a
disaster piece.
Needs Thorazine. Take a little Thorazine, and you're right there with Lou and Bob. Well, thank you guys very much for
Yahoo!
Listening in to the Shabby Road Record Show. The mystery boxes are empty, A.D. Adams.
Listen to that.
Number 118.
And we don't know what we want.
And that's right. Another Alice Cooper reference.
Yes.
Well done. Well played. We want to thank Ricky Serrano for running the controls tonight.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have him back. And he's brought with him that cantankerous old sod who's going to break out of this town one day. How 5,000?
You shut the fuck up!
Hey!
Yay.
I've been nice all night.
Yeah.
Fine, motherfucker!
What? Jesus.
Fuck you.
Wow. Great to have him back.
Yeah.
Oof. Who's on the ass for Van Bench seat over there?
Oh, that's our luscious Liz, our liquor
yes,
mistress over here.
Oh, oh.
We have a shirtless Dan Ulick over there for
shirtless.
No, shirtless as all.
We are posting a picture.
Shirtless as a violent Ringo.
My pants are still on.
Yeah.
We have been dealing with a shirtless Dan Ulick.
And
crash
Chad's
daddy
over there trying to make him put his shirt back on, but it's not working,
not
is it? It's not happening.
There's a great picture of Ricky and a shirtless Dan that will be posted on our Facebook
put
page.
Put it up immediately, yes, that must be seen.
In the comments section of this episode. And speaking of that, please like us on Facebook, won't you? And follow us on Twitter at Shabby Podcast. And all that stuff that you guys do, share an Osborne and share alike. If you would, please. We love that. And iTunes reviews are of the utmost importance to the local Phoenix podcaster, because that puts us higher in the rankings over there, and that's awesome. So if you got a minute, do us a solid,
yes,
and do that.
I'm all
thank you.
Fist.
Thank you. And I guess that's about it, right? Anything else?
Hey, sure. We got
it.
Biz taken care of, don't we?
I think so. The biz is done. So I will say this. As I skate across this viscous goo that covers the carpet here at Shabby, this tumble-down studio, I'm aiming my puck right at the net behind A.D. Adams.
Yes, probably.
It's kind of like you did the inside. How about this? So off we go into the smoky gray yonder. So don your helmets, pads, and hurl buckets. We're stepping out into the dank streets of Sunny Slope as we dance hand in hand down the brown brick road. Just me and my pal and co-host, Ryan McKay.
That's appalling.
I was gonna call it a shit brick road, but I thought that would be too. Brown brick is fine.
That was a cool, odd baseball reference you made in that last one.
What?
The Montreal Expos player. Don your helmets?
Don your helmets, yes.
He was the shortstop for the Montreal Expos in 78. Don your helmets?
78? A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. Nameonanything.com.
I am a new devotee of Cox. I'm a new fan of Cox.
Let me admit that I like Cox.
Right?